Welcome to All the Things with Kristen Schindler. We all have things. Doesn't matter if we're married or single, if we have no children, or if we have 10. Things in life can be overwhelming, and sometimes we just don't know how to navigate them. So each week, you're going to hear stories of hope, of inspiration, and of people navigating the same things that you and I deal with day in and day out. Their stories may sound different than ours, or they may sound just like us. Either way, each week this podcast is going to pour into your heart with hope and encouragement. We are so glad that you are here. Welcome, friends, to another episode of All the Things with Kristen Schindler. I'm so excited today for you guys to meet my guest, Chris Tice. Chris is a dad of three. He's husband to his wife, Micah. Together, they have founded Eagle Fire Enrichment. It's a leadership solutions company. And, you know, Chris has been on a friend of mine's podcast. That's where I came across his story. And I was so excited that he was going to join us today and share his story of his life and how he has taken issues that many of us, Chris, have dealt with in our lives that can, you know, really push us under and make us feel like heavy with the weight. And you really turned that around and you're using that for good. It's like a good superpower. So I'm so excited for you to be with us here.
Well, thank you. I'm beyond excited myself, and I feel very blessed to have the opportunity and allow for opportunity of forgiveness and growth and just learning how to serve within yourself so you can serve others better.
I love it. Yeah, that's exactly where I feel that I am with the things. And, you know, when I was looking at, you know, for those of you who are listeners, you know, you don't know this because this goes behind the scenes. But, you know, when I meet somebody and I kind of want to feel out how their, you know, what their platform is and what story and message they have to share, I send them a Google form in it and I ask them, like, what types of things do you want to share? And then that gives me some information about them. It gives them a chance to share their information. And so, Chris, you had, you know, mentioned a couple things. And for me, when I was looking at your story and what you wanted to share, it really fit into a couple of those six pillars that we have, the THINGS of our things. And the ones that stood out to me were the growth, where you're going and how you're growing. And we're going to get into that. And then your service to self and others. But you serve a family right now. So tell us a little bit about your parenting season that you're in right now.
Yeah, parenting season. It's kind of all over the place. It's definitely a mixture of time and focus and emotions. And so the time component is we have an 18-year-old, we have a 5-year-old, and we have a 3-year-old.
And wowzers.
yeah, so focus is literally day to day. You know, the two littlest are in preschool, but the oldest graduated school this past spring. And then so, you know, there's all the emotions tied in with he's wanting to move out and he has a job and he has his own car and he's an adult now and he's a phenomenal young man. So it just, you know, but you see this journey, and what's been really interesting to me is now watching the 5 and 3-year-old. So the 18-year-old's a boy, the 5-year-old's a boy, and the 3-year-old's a girl. Watching those two, and then standing back and reminiscing, going, oh, Bradley's the name of the oldest. I remember when Bradley did that. Oh, yeah, Bradley did that too. Ooh, I really remember when he did that. Yeah, it really puts things into perspective. But for me, it's a little different, I feel, because of the age gap. I mean, there's 13 years between Bradley and our 5-year-old Joshua. And so it's this total flood of, okay, I remember that. We'll get through this stage. You know, there's always those stages where parents are just, they're ready to scream, and maybe they do. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is never going to end. And then when it's over, you look back and go, wow, that was easy. And so you move forward. Mm-hmm. And so watching this progression with the 5 and 3-year-old and going, okay, I remember that. I can get through it. It's really unique because The other thing that's been cool is discussing with my 18-year-old some of the things. Our 5-year-old is active in some sports. I say some, he's very active, but there's things that he's told me that I remembered having some of those same conversations with Bradley. And so even though he doesn't remember it real well, it's still nice to get his perspective of this same conversation and the responses he gave me. It honestly helps me be a better dad. And so to be
That's
able to have,
awesome.
yeah, to have that level of respect not only helps me be a better dad, but in my opinion, it helps my oldest start to learn the adult way. And well, this is why you do this. This is why you do that. This is why you let this go. And he looks at me and goes, well, you didn't let that go with me. Well, I learned. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I always say, you know, you're the first one. I'm saving for therapy for you. I'm sorry I messed you up. Okay.
Yeah, that's the
Just,
experiment. I'm sorry. And he laughs about it. Like I said, he's a good-natured young man, but it does. It gives you just this totally different focus on your values. And when I say
I
values in this,
imagine.
I especially think of time, which is your first, that's your thing, that's time. And I think the biggest kicker for me was when Josh turned 2, trying to do the math in my head, Emma was on the way or already here, and it was just a blink of an eye. Like, oh my gosh, Josh is 2. Bradley's 16, he's getting ready to get a car. Emma's here. And it just, the time went away. It disappeared. And I remembered asking some friends of mine who have multiple kids, and the ages may not range like ours does, but there's at least an age range. And I just said, when Bradley was 2, it felt like it took forever to get to 2 and to get through it. And I said, there, I know I've got a lesson in this. What is it? And they said, well, you just realized how valuable time is with your kids.
Well,
And
that's what I was going to ask you. Like, I was going to ask you, knowing that, like, you see the oldest one and you see him, like, ready to, you know, want to flutter out of the nest and, you know, him thinking about all these things that he wants to do. Does that make you, because, see, mine are, I have a senior this year. And then I have a freshman, so I have boy, and then I have girl, and then my daughter is in fifth grade. And so, for me, they and we homeschool, and we have been homeschooling for the last 3 years. So time has shifted for me because when I was working full time, I felt like I was on that hamster wheel, and like I would jump off for summers, and then we would have a chance to kind of like gather everything up, spend some time together, and then boom, like the hamster wheel started again. But now that I have chosen a different trajectory and a different way that we educate our children, time is a little different for me. But I do feel like with my oldest being a senior and like all those firsts and lasts that are happening your senior year, it's really making me look at like, oh my gosh, my middle one, his name is Logan. Like, Logan's a freshman this year, and we're already halfway through the freshman year. Like, he's almost a 10th grader. He's not going to be a freshman anymore. And then, you know, and so then for my daughter, she's 10, but she's like 10 going on, you know, 17. The other day, she was like, Mom, I'm really proud of the work you're doing with your podcast. But I really want you to focus and take some time for you and maybe go have a walk with a friend.
Oh, it's
Or
so
I know
good.
she and so for me, I can't. So there's part of me that would like to like keep her 10, like, and make her like slow it down, you know, but it's almost like it's just out of control. So do you feel that way with your like with your little girl, especially like since she's so little, like do you feel like you just want to really hold her even tighter longer because you see how fast it went with your oldest?
Yeah, because I mean, here she is. She'll be 4 here in April. I mean,
No.
4, like it's gone. And Micah, my wife, her hair is halfway down her back now, and she's got full sentences and full words. And she may not have said like what your daughter said, but she's also not far from it. And Micah the other day, she looked at her and she's like, "Did you just grow again?" And I just kind of looked over and she goes, "Chris, I think she grew again." And I stood there, I was like, "No, stop. Just stop." She's like, "No, she's really already starting to look like a little adult." "No, stop, because we already have an adult. I'm still trying to reminisce about that right now." And it does, it zips right by you. And you brought up high school and how fast that goes. I think one thing as parents, we do start to value these times. But how many of us, and I know I'm not the only one, so I'm going to say it, tell our kids, enjoy high school. It'll be the fastest 4 years of your life. You better enjoy this moment. You better enjoy this. You're only going to get to do this once. You only get to do that once, which is true. There's a lot of things you only do a couple times while you're in high school. And then, bam, you're in the adult world. You're off on your own. It's going to be time to figure it all out. And I look at going back to Bradley, he was in band all 4 years of high school. And I helped out quite a bit. With their camps and things, and as best as I could as a parent volunteer. And it was just really weird because one day I'm sitting on the field with only Josh while they're doing band camp, summer camp. And then the next thing I know, it's senior year. I have both Josh and Emma next to me. And I went from Bradley being the freshman who's learning how to step the first time with his instrument to now teaching the freshman how to step. And it felt like one day was all it felt like. And now he's just done. I mean, I kept telling him senior year is over before you know it. And all that time that I kept saying that to him, I didn't realize I was actually saying it to myself. So then, yes, now I look at my two youngest going, man, don't miss a moment. Don't miss a beat. You're probably going to. So parents, don't feel bad about that because it's going to happen. But at the same
Oh,
time,
absolutely.
if you're pouring into them and you've got that value and you value what you're doing as a parent for your children, I promise you they're gonna do great. They're gonna be more than okay. They're gonna be more than fine. They're gonna do great. And that's because we know that when we value time, which is the one resource you can't have back, it's the one true resource we can't have back. When we value that, no matter how big or small it is, whether it's this massive vacation you take together or a simple dinner where all electronics are put away, the TV is turned off, and we have a conversation about the day, the week, maybe you do a daily devotional together or catch up on the current events of what happened at school or what did you learn today or whatever that is. When you do that, they see that value. They know. Kids are learning, constantly learning, and they know. And so just for that sake of holding on to those moments and those memories, if I have any I don't like the word regret, but if I wished I'd have done something differently, I would have taken more pictures and more videos. And granted, when Bradley was younger, like Josh and Emma, we didn't have the iPhones, iPads, and all that, but I did have a digital camera. We actually found it the other day. And even though I'd put it all on the computer, I just kind of looked and then I started thumbing through some of the paper photos I have. And I just started thinking, there's not enough. I've got more on my iPhone now because I've learned that value, that time. And now it's a memory. Which is great. It's a great memory. And I like to know that we have it and move on. But at the same time, it goes so fast.
It surely does. It surely does. Well, let's talk a little bit about what your life was like before you were ever a parent, because I'm interested to hear about your story and about. We talked a little bit about your story and your family and the way that you were brought up was vastly different than the way that you're parenting your children today. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so why I get so focused on the time and the value that we have, when I share this story, I want to make a couple things clear. I'm not here to vilify anybody because I've learned from it. I'm also not here to say that it was all bad. But sometimes we got to share in the bad so we can turn it into good. And so for me, my mom, my birth mother, left when I was a year and a half. The basic understanding I've been given my whole life was she did not want me, which she has basically proven over and over again. Even as an adult, she does not know her grandkids, has no relationship with me whatsoever. And so growing up that way, all I had was my dad and my extended family, grandparents and aunts and uncles who all helped out. They all helped to shape and form who I am today, what I've become, and where I'm headed. And I'm beyond grateful for that. But growing up, my life was the epitome of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. My dad partied a lot and took me with him. And so I had to kind of grow up really fast. At the age of 5, I knew how to pump and tap a keg. And then fast forward a few years, along comes my stepmom. And at that age, I didn't fully understand what it meant to have a mom, to have that presence. And I longed for it, even though I didn't truly know what it meant. I mean, yes, I had my grandma and my aunts, but it's not the same. And so I longed for that. And she got my dad to quit the partying. She helped to start getting me lined out in school because I was messing around, screwing around in school, did not care about it, didn't think I had to, even though, yes, I was only in elementary school. But there was some structure. But when structure and rule being the main effect here, which brought on power, things shifted and changed very quickly in our house. While yes, we did so many fun things and I had some amazing experiences, there were also hurts of at the age of 10, they called my soon-to-be stepbrother and I into the bedroom. He was 2 years younger than me. And said, "Hey guys, now that we're all living together and we've established what's going to happen, we want you two to understand our expectations of you." And my father looked at me square in the eyes and said, "Chris, our expectation of you is that you will always struggle. You won't do well in school. You basically won't amount to anything. You'll follow my path. You'll find something to do with your life, but it's probably not going to amount to really anything." And basically said, the word "can't" will always be a part of your vocabulary. I just stood there and
Wow.
went, "What? What did you just say to me? Like, what happened?"
So, can I ask you a question about like why, like what was the areas that you were struggling with in school? Like if we looked at it now, would you have said that you had like a learning disability or a challenge or something that would, could have been helped had you had more resources when you were a boy? Or was it just the lack of structure from the beginning?
Most of it, honestly, was lack of structure in the home because since my dad struggled in school, no one, and I found this out even with my own family, no one expected me to do much because of that lack of structure. Now, when I was at grandma's house, because she practically raised me as far as keeping that structure around me, she watched me a bunch while my dad was working and all that kind of stuff. And then, most of my family is either firefighters or teachers. And so, whenever they could get a hold of me and make me do my homework, I would get it done. I've been told I have a touch of ADD, but that's more of I like to talk and have conversation and pay attention and learn that way. And back then, a lot of those things weren't accepted, the creativity or simple example, art class. I'm not the person that fills out the entire sheet with pictures and stuff. When I do the sky is literally at the top of the page. And I used to get in trouble for that. You have to fill out the whole piece of paper. That's not my picture. you're telling me that, that's not my picture. And so there was structure, but there wasn't. When I got home, if I told my dad I
Right.
didn't have any homework, oh, okay, you can watch TV or you can go outside and play. He didn't actually get into my backpack and look. 90% of the time, I was lying
Yeah,
to him.
the reason why I was asking was because, two of my three children, they look at the world through the lens of dyslexia. And so we have come to learn about that, over the years. And it's presented in both sides of our family. The more that we've learned about my grandfather, and his mom was a teacher in a one-room schoolhouse. His mom was his teacher. And in the last couple of years, before they merged into the local school, it was my grandfather and his two best friends and his mom. And they and it was really challenging. And he hated school. He was a horrible speller. And the more that my mom and I have kind of learned about dyslexia over the years, we're convinced that my grandfather was dyslexic, but just he didn't know it. His mom didn't know it. And he quit school in 10th grade. And you can imagine, a person who is an educator and having their child, quit school. But school was was a struggle for him. He just didn't learn the way that he was being taught. It was a misfit in delivery. The delivery system wasn't compatible with the way that he learned things. And so that's why I asked if now that you're older, you could look back and see that, the way that, you were being educated just wasn't really in alignment with the kind of learner that you were. And if there was like a family history of that same similar, because a lot of times when I talk to people, and when I would work in the school district, if I had a student that struggled, the parents had also struggled. And then there was that shame, there was that educational shame that came with it. And so then they wouldn't be supportive of their children, and they would just expect, because they didn't realize it was something that could go from generation to generation. They just thought, I'm not very good. I didn't work hard. My kid's going to work harder. And darn it, when you go to school, you better do your work. And if they didn't do their work, then the hammer came down hard, because there wasn't a lot of understanding there. So I didn't know if maybe you had delved into that for your own, just learning strat, different ways that learning struggles and strategies and things of that nature.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me, the touch of ADD is most likely what blocked me. Reading is really hard for me, not in the physical sense, but I get distracted very, very easily when I have to structure myself in like a reading. If it's spoken or it's hands-on, I can stay focused. But if I'm reading something, I really, every so often, I have to stare at a wall for a little bit or even watch a video or something and then come back to it if it's longer than a half an hour. So as I got older and we had to read more and more, it actually became more difficult for me. And this was one thing that my stepmom brought into it because my stepbrother had ADHD and had to do all the medicines and things of that nature. Whereas when they talked to me about it, it was, well, you may have it, but you can overcome it. Well, when you're told your word is can't for life, it's kind of hard to associate that. So then it always became this get it done or else. So then I always did it out of punishment and fear. I was so afraid of getting it wrong that I would just have to push myself to get it right. And then, of course, I would experience burnout, which I didn't know what that was. So then I would have a month or a quarter or even a chunk of a year that I just didn't care. I didn't do the work. I didn't want to, because the support was very authoritative. And so I was working so hard to compensate or overcompensate for what was going on with me. But because all the focus was put to my stepbrother, and well, either you'll figure it out or you won't. And if you won't, oh, well, you'll just do what your dad did. Don't worry about it. Because that's what your dad dealt with. He was always behind, but well, he still graduated and he still puts food on the plate. Well, that's great. And don't get me, I appreciate that. But when you're 10 years old, that doesn't make sense. And you don't understand that. And so fast forward into becoming a Boy Scout, We were at a on a camp out, and this is where my passion comes in, working with leadership and creating and bringing forth the leader that's within people. While yes, this scout leader was literally my scout leader, he was my scout master. He was also a business leader, but this is not the kind of leader I'm talking about. This is the leader that wanted to take time to mentor me and coach me. And I was 14, I think, when we had this conversation. And we were always early risers. So we were known to have coffee together. And we're sitting there chatting, having coffee. And he said, "Chris, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And for a long time, I had that figured out until I was told, "Well, you can't do that and you probably shouldn't." And it was to become a fireman. So I looked at him and said, "I don't know." He said, "Why don't you know?" And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I guess because I can't." He looked at me square in the face. I'll never forget the look on his face. I mean, there was just passion and compassion in his eyes for me. He said, "I have seen the leader that you are." He goes, "Anything you set your mind and heart to, get your soul right with God on, you can do it." And right then and there, in my life, I said, "Can't never did." People ask me, "What does that mean?" I said, "Because can't never did anything for me. When someone said I can't, I knew I could. When I say I can't, I'm going to figure out a way to where I can." And so for high school became a challenge, not in this lack of being able to work, but just knowing I'm going to prove them wrong because I don't have any major setbacks. I don't. And for those that do, my heart goes out to you. I really does, because my only setback actually became my mindset. Yes, it was pushed onto me, but I had to learn to overcome that because I didn't have, like what you were talking about, I didn't have that. So how do you overcome that? And so it just kind of became this personal vendetta and revenge to get back at everybody that said, "You can't do this." I didn't have a reason not to. I really didn't. And so that had to propel me forward. And if it didn't, I was just going to accept that I can't do anything and I can't amount to anything. And that's just not, I've seen so many amazing people do amazing things regardless of the circumstances. And I'm not saying it's all easy. I'm not saying it's all daisies and roses. I will never actually claim that. But to see people adapt and overcome just fuels me even more to say, "I know I can."
You know, when you think about Chris, you think about that was really like divine pivotal placement. That coffee talk in the morning is quiet. Nobody else is there. There's no other distractions. And for that conversation to occur at that time in that moment, like all the time that you spent with that person and that, you know, Boy Scout leader, it could have been just for that specific comment. You know, he built your trust. You knew he was a good person. And he poured into you in that way, in that time where you were actually ready to receive it. And, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, pouring out that hope to other people. And that hope that he gave you, and I said this earlier on the podcast that I was on earlier today, it was completely and utterly free. It cost him nothing to give you that. To plant that seed of hope. And I love acronyms. And so, like, hope to me is helping others persevere through everything
Oh,
every day.
that's so good.
And that's what he did. He planted that seed for you that was completely and utterly free. And he poured on, you know, that dose of believing in you. And it was enough nutrients to start that bud for you of growth to then want to keep feeding it yourself. You know, I love it. I love it. My oldest son is working on finishing his Eagle Scout, and that's one of the things in his senior year. So, and he's had great mentorship and great leaders. So that's so powerful. That's so awesome.
Well, one thing you said in that, it cost him nothing to do that, but it was worth everything to me. It was
Absolutely.
worth everything to me because I did get my Eagle Scout. I was the first in my entire family to do it. My great
Yay!
grandma came up to me. She goes, "I finally have my eagle because my grandpa and his brothers had tried. My dad and his brothers had tried. And then here I came." And then now my oldest, his Eagle Court of Honor is this weekend from when we're recording this. So
Oh,
yeah, thank you.
congratulations. That's so exciting.
And
Yeah, my son is the only eagle in our family. You know, my dad was never an Eagle Scout. Never a Boy Scout. And then my brother was a scout for a while, and then he didn't, you know, continue on with it. And then my other son, he did scouting for a little bit, and it wasn't for him. But my oldest son has really stuck with it. And that's one of the things, honestly, that when we changed his trajectory of education, his scouting was one of the things that we talked about. And I had had another friend whose son had been homeschooled his whole majority of his years. He had had a traumatic brain injury as a child, and the school district, when he was like in first grade, wasn't going to be able to give him what he needed to get back on track. So she decided to homeschool him. And so he joined Scouts, you know, as a Cub Scout. We would always see that he was like the one that would always get all of the, every time we had like a court of honor, for those of you who aren't Scout friends listening, it's like a big deal, like a couple times a year, and you get like all these awards and stuff and all the merit badges. And this guy was like the merit badge king, you know. But it's because he was homeschooled. And so they used all those merit badges as part of his learning.
That's so
You
cool.
know, that was part of his curriculum, you know, so that when my son, when, you know, when he, when we pulled him home in 10th grade to homeschool, I said to him, I said, you know, you can use your merit badges, because up till that point, he was working so hard to keep his head above water, he couldn't even have that extra time in the evening to do Boy Scout work. It's like his brain just couldn't, you know, there was just too much, and it had hit its limit. And just getting through school was enough. And so I said to him, you know, if we hack it and we do it differently, you can still do your Boy Scout stuff and work on your Eagle Scout, and you know, we can do this. And it was really important for him, because making that milestone and putting his mind to it, knowing that nobody else in our family has done that, that's, you know, it's pretty powerful, you know, personal perseverance. And nobody can take that away from you. You know, once you've reached that, you know that you've done it. So that's so cool. So excited to have, you know, be part of the Eagle family with you.
Yeah, and congratulations to you guys, and especially to your son, because I know how hard it is. People, listeners, for those of you who don't know, not only is it a lot of work, it's a lot of dedication, it's a lot of commitment, it's a lot of fun too. But one of the things that a lot of people don't know is that of all scouts who start scouting, only 2% become Eagles. It has been that way from day one of the Eagle Scout rank. Only 2% of all scouts who
Yeah.
start. So, you know, it just, but what scouting gave me was you talked about like the divine intervention with that scout leader. It gave me confidence. And so, you know, moving forward, I started to learn how to overcome things. But like I said, I was doing a lot of it out of vengeance and revenge and saying, "Ooh, look, I did this. Ooh, look, I did that." And so it all became a part of this unhealthy boundary of saying yes to everything. To where, you know, people ask me, "Oh, can you do this? Can you be here? Can you be there?" Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there. I'll be there. I'll be there. And so I built up becoming, oh, there's the movie. I think it's called Yes Man. And I was that
Oh,
person.
yeah.
I was that person. I said yes, and I would take it all on, and then couldn't figure out why I don't sleep well at night, or why I was so busy, or why someone was mad at me because, well, you said you were going to be here, but I wasn't because I was somewhere else, and it just became this constant struggle of, well, I can do everything, and no, you can't. You're not.
No.
I know I just used that word can't,
You can't do all
but
the
you can't
things.
do
You
all the
can't do
things.
all the things.
You know, as a
No.
parent, as an employee, as a husband or wife, as a person in the church or in scouts or anything like that. I mean, even for the scouts that earned every single merit badge, there are still things they didn't get done in scouts. So, I had to learn that. It was definitely a hard lesson to learn, but it was because I was living this life of saying, I'm going to prove you guys wrong. I'm going to be something and be somebody. But the key word in all this is I. As a believer, I had to realize that with man, some things are impossible. With God, all things are possible. And so when I surrendered that, I was sitting in a sermon that said, if there is one thing you have to do in life, you have to learn how to forgive. And it was a flood of emotions because I was like, but this person did this to me. This person did this to me. This person did this to me. And it wasn't until I heard the quote, things that happen to you in life don't happen to you, they happen for you. And that became my release to say, you know what? I need to forgive. I need to forgive my mom. I need to forgive my dad. I need to forgive my stepmom. I need to forgive all those people who said you won't amount to anything. And I'm not saying this because of the vengeance. I'm saying it because it freed me. It allowed me to say no. It allowed me to open up my time for the things that are truly valuable in my life, my priorities, what God has put in my path, my marriage, my children, my church, my business, my hobbies. There's now a structure to it all. Yeah, I'm still busy. Yes, I still have some sleepless nights. I have a 3 and 5 year old. I have an 18 year old. It's yeah. So, no one's sleeping in this house,
Right, you got
basically.
one teething, you got one teething, and you got one driving, and it's
Exactly.
like, ah.
Exactly. But I even with everything that's going on that I could consider negative, I still do everything I can to see it positively. And I've had a lot of people go, well, how can you do that with everything that's happened to you? I can't do this, I can't do that. And I said, well, that's part of the problem. You're using that word. What word? Can't. Can't never did. It's not doing us any good when we use it in a phrase that stops us from moving forward, from moving onward. And that's easier said than done. I'm not even halfway through life yet, as far as chronological age could be considered. But I also don't like being stuck when I know there's more I can do for people. My word of the year this year is growth. And I know you're in your acronym things, G is going and growing. Well, my theme for this year is growth. And my theme last year was connection. And last year, I became more connected with God. I became more connected with people than I ever thought would be possible. And so this year with growth, it's what can I do to move beyond myself, to use my story to help others forgive, to gain time, to become that leader that so many years ago sat at the picnic table drinking coffee and said, you can. How can we grow in that? And so,
Yeah, that's powerful. It's powerful when you kind of marinate in your giftedness, and it takes a while. It takes a while for you to really like kind of, just like beef, you got like a tough, piece of beef, and they before they cook it, they got to marinate it, they got to add all those seasonings. And when you think about you as a person, these things that have toughened you up in life, that you really have to marinate in and recognize and add more of the things that fill your cup, the sweet things in life, the savory things in life, and you have to let all those things marry together and soften your heart. And once that happens, then you recognize, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And then you're able to share that gift with others. And that's one of like my favorite quotes is, you have your gifts, but your gifts are meant to be given away.
yes.
And I think that, you're doing that in your story of forgiveness. And let me ask you, did you ever have a time where you actually sat with your father and you told him like this kind of story about being told that you couldn't and how that affected you. Like, did you ever say those words to him or have that opportunity?
So the cool thing about my dad and I's relationship is we can have any kind of conversation we want. That's one thing we have always had, which is why one of my major pillars is communication. It's not just in what we say, but how we say it, when we can say it, why we're saying it, and even who we're saying it to. And so when I first started sharing my story, it was with like youth groups and things in the church, and then I became more public with it. And I was scared to tell him that I was going to start sharing the story. And I looked at him, and I was like, "Chris, you just got to say it. You know your dad, just say it." And he's an amazing man. Like I said, I'm not here to vilify those in my past because we have moved on. But I just looked and I said, "I just want to let you know, I'm sharing this." He looked at me square in the face. He said, "Son, I've got nothing to hide." He goes, "I have nothing to hide." He goes, "We've forgiven each other." He said, "But we've also become better because of it." He goes, "So, you know, if it's helping other people become better, we can't hide from it."
That's awesome.
Boom. Okay,
That's,
thanks, Dad.
yeah.
Like I was thinking that, but I'd never said it like that. And like my
Right.
former stepmom, they're since divorced. We have messaged each other back and forth in very nice and supportive ways. She has I one thing we share in common, we both like the band Styx. And I got to take Bradley to a Styx concert, and she sent me a message, said, "Hey, if I could have your address, I want to send Bradley something." I was like, "Oh, okay." Because I told her we were getting to go to the concert because I remembered. It's like I said, it wasn't all bad. I got to meet Styx at the age
Sure.
of 14. We drove to Chicago
Oh, wow.
overnight. We literally left at like 8 o'clock at night. My stepbrother's in the shower. I'm watching TV, and they said, "Pack a couple clothes. We're going to Chicago." I said, "Whatever." Turn around, start watching TV. They're like, "No, we're serious. We're leaving right now." We got to meet them. So yeah, so a good experience. And so, like you said, this stew of life, you know, it all mixes in. And sure enough, a couple days later, their brand new Styx's brand new CD was in my mailbox for Bradley, and he's got it in his car now and listens to it all the time. And they've never even met each other. He's never met her. He's seen some pictures of her, and we've shared stories and things of that nature. And she has sent me support for my wife and I's business and the things we do. And but that's why moving forward and why forgiveness is just so essential to life. I mean, you know, they asked Jesus, you know, "How many times should we forgive? Seven?" He said, "Not seven, 77." And it wasn't to put a number on it. It was just what, or at least especially what it's become to me, is this understanding of, and this is why I say, especially try to highlight not vilifying people. I'm not perfect. I have made more than my fair share of people mad. I have wronged people. I'm sorry for that. And I mean that from the heart. There are still times that keeps me awake at night. And you know, most everyone I've been able to talk to, and we've worked it out, but not everyone we can. And so that's why, you know, like you said, with that message of hope, it just gives us in the stew of life. You know, you talked about all the spices and marinades. You know, we have bitter herbs in life too, and that gets thrown into the pot as well. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But no matter what, we still have to move on. I mean, we really don't have a choice. Until the day we die, life is still moving on. And my goal in that is just to say, "Hey, listen, I know we can. I know we can." Because can't never did anything for us.
Yeah, it's there's so much healing in like what you're talking about, like having these conversations with your dad, allowing, you know, your stepmom to bless you as, you know, as an adult. You know, I'm sure if I've learned recently about this historical timeline therapy where, you know, you look at events in your life and it would be really interesting to look at her, the events in her life and how those events then manifest themselves in the decisions and things that people make, and they kind of like splinter off, you know. So it'd be interesting. And but having that ability to let her, send that gift to your son, there, that's a sense of healing. That's a balm on a wound that, maybe has healed over for, many, many years, but just seeing that her willingness to do that, I mean, that shows a lot of, just a level of caring there. That's so nice to hear.
Well, real
So,
quick on that.
what are
Real quick on that. I want to say that it goes beyond myself, because I do know some of her story. And it's her story to tell. But that's my hope, and that is that caused healing for her. So not just our relationship, but outside of our relationship. But it also shows my son, who knows some of these things and has seen some of the things that have happened, because we can't hide all our scars. It also
Right.
shows him, hey, we have this ability to move on and move past these things. And because he's at that stage and age now, where we started earlier talking about where we are in this parenting thing now. It used to be well, such and such pushed me down at the playground, to now there's greater possibilities and potential problems and consequences, but also solutions. And so for
Right.
me to be able to have resolve in that and solving a problem of my own heart, because 5 years ago me, when that happened, probably would have just been like, no, I don't really trust you to give me my address, when she was just wanting to gift us something. And I don't like living in bitterness. So yeah, that's just
Right.
something that I think gives an opportunity for healing all around.
Absolutely. And when you said that, we shouldn't hide our scars, we shouldn't hide them, and really, by hiding them, it does nothing for the next generation. They then live with an image that's not true. And then they don't learn to become compassionate, because they don't know the full truth. And I know that that's something that I strive to do with my children, is to be very honest and forthright with them with experiences, that I've had in my life. Because when you pretend that everything is fine, that just sets up other people for when life's on them, because it's going to,
Oh, yeah.
for them to feel so isolated, because they feel like, oh, my mom and dad never had to deal with this. I remember the other day, my daughter was asking me about, Mom, did you have other boyfriends before you met dad? I was like, oh yeah, I had lots. She's like, really? And so she came home. We were driving home. We were coming home from martial arts, and she hopped in the house, and I probably checked my phone or something, and I was taking a little bit to come in the house, because my minivan's my sanctuary. It's my quiet. It's my, solitude of like like Superman, and so I came in, and my husband's like, what are you telling our daughter that you had all these boyfriends? I'm like, well, I did. I'm like, and why is that important? Well, I shared with him. I said, I didn't go into great detail, but what happens if she meets somebody and she thinks, because we just never mentioned it, that you and I were the first boyfriend and girlfriend we ever had, and in her mind, she's created this reality. And she meets someone and it doesn't work out, and she's mortified, and because, oh, no, that's not real life.
No.
Let's not set our kid up for that, and that's a silly example, but he came in, and then I said to him, like, tell her about the girlfriends you had in, Germany when you were. He's like, I don't need to tell her that, and she's like, he had girlfriends in Germany, and he's like, oh, great,
Well, the other thing, when you
so.
look at serving others, I had this discussion with the youth group a while back, where we don't. There's a lot of times we don't feel qualified. Maybe call it imposter syndrome if you want. Because, well, I didn't have that experience. Okay. But do you know someone else who did? Oh, yeah, such and such.
Right.
Okay. Well, if we're not sharing our stories, then we don't know who we can help or can find someone who can go help. If someone has a totally different situation from mine and they hear my story, they may not fully relate, but then they're sitting in a group or sitting at the table, and they're having this conversation, and there is something that aligns with something I said. oh, hey, here's this person. And I don't necessarily mean me. It could be you, Kristen. It could be whoever they meet. If we're not doing that, then history's going to repeat itself. And that's, I think that's kind of one of my biggest goals is I don't want to see that. And so, yeah, so when we
Well, and you
share.
and I, that's how you and I connected. That's exactly how you and I connected. You were on a friend of mine's podcast. I saw, I listened to your story and it resonated with me, and that's how we connected. And had she not shared your story and having her willingness to step out and deal with her own, trauma and healing, she wouldn't have welcomed you to share her mic space, and I wouldn't have heard your message, and I wouldn't have been able to bring you to hear to share on my with my audience. And someone who's listening today, your story is going to resonate with them. I right now I have about average, 20 to 30, depending on the episode downloads. And if one of those 30 people it was meant to hear your story today, then that's a win. That's
Exactly.
who was supposed to hear it.
Exactly. And so, you know, that and that actually I had a pastor friend of mine that she wanted me to share my story with our youth group at the time. And I said, I can't do that. She goes, why? I said, I don't know, you know, they're kids. You know, she's like, okay, well, the Bible says not discount somebody because they're young. I'm like, okay, touche. You win on that one. She said, but here's the thing. Some of the things you're going through, some of these kids are going through, or maybe their parents are going through, or maybe an uncle or an aunt. You don't know. But if you don't share it, you'll never know. She goes, and you're the one that always says you want to help people. That's why you do what you do. Oh,
Ow, ouch.
okay. All right.
Ugh.
There's the heart check. All right, brain. Time to get this in action and
Yep.
align with the soul because the soul is designed for this. So,
Oh,
you know, but
yep.
yeah, if we don't, then we won't. And then we set ourselves up for the can't stuff. And we got to break the can't stuff. We got to get out there and
Right.
work
It's
together.
hard to hear that though.
Oh, yeah.
It's good for your pastor to say those hard things, because it's not always easy to hear though, to say those. And it's definitely not always easy to hear those. My husband just said the same thing to me the other day, because I was putting off, getting a surgical procedure, and he was like, "Hey, you're the lady that tells everybody how to balance their things, and the H stands for health. So I think you need to make a call." And I was like, "Ugh." But guess what? By doing that, I'm being authentic. And I'm doing what I know is what's best. And then I will be able to relate to other people who are dealing with similar situations. And so, but it was, it was, there was a sense of vulnerability for him to share that and be, willing to call me out on, my things. So, well, listen, I have had such a wonderful time talking to you. And as we wrap up today, are there, just some closing thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I think the big thing for me is just take a moment, no matter how long it is, and just appreciate the simple things in life. Appreciate what you know you've been given, what you've been gifted with, and then take the smallest of baby steps to share it. You know, we're not always able to just take these giant leaps, but baby steps still lead to giant leaps. And just know that you're not the only one out there. It may feel like it may seem like it, but you're not alone. We were designed a community. God literally created us to help one another and to serve one another. He said that your job is to serve me and to serve one another. Love God, love others. And when we share love, we become authentic. And when we become more authentic, we become better. We become stronger and we become more grateful.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Chris. So often in life, and we don't have any idea what those words that we hear as children, how they root themselves in our ears, and they play those tapes over and over again, and they become the belief systems that we carry with us into adulthood. So I just hope that Chris's story resonated with you.
and you really understood the power of that Scoutmaster in his life to really roll back those beliefs and restart and reboot his belief system to be something of positivity and perseverance and knowing that he could do those things. And I just want you to know that you too can roll back and reboot those things, those words, those thoughts, that you have those tapes playing in your head, that you are worth it, you can do it, and I believe in you.
Thank you.